Imagine this, a busy factory, end of the day. Hundreds of workers, mostly young women, sewing machines humming away. It's March 25th, 1911, and then just chaos, fire erupts. Suddenly the building's a death trap, nearly 200 people caught inside. The accounts from that day are truly chilling.
Yeah.
Young women, you know, forced to jump from 9 stories up, a crowd watching below, just helpless. This was the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory Fire. So in this deep dive, we're really going to unpack how this one horrific event, 146 people lost their lives, mostly young immigrant women, how it became this, well, undeniable catalyst.
Yeah, a catalyst for huge changes. We're talking American labor laws, workplace safety, even the women's rights movement, really.
Exactly. And we're drawing on some powerful sources here, eyewitness accounts, which are just harrowing, news reports from the time, historical analysis.
Right, to understand not just what happened, but why it mattered so much and why it, frankly, still resonates.
Okay, let's start by setting the scene. Because to really get the horror, you need the context.
Yeah.
Early 20th century America.
It's booming.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely booming. It's the height of the Industrial Revolution, spilling into the Gilded Age, massive wealth, massive factories, cities exploding, but also a lot of inequality.
And then comes the Progressive Era, this period of reform movement starting to bubble up.
But that boom had a really dark side. It was built on, well, rampant exploitation, especially immigrant labor.
People desperate for work.
Exactly. Particularly women, often new to the country, willing to work for almost nothing in conditions that were, let's just say, highly questionable, often downright dangerous.
And the demand for more stuff, faster production, that just fueled it.
It created the whole environment. Businesses cut corners on safety, on wages. Anything to maximize profit, it was systemic.
Which brings us to the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory itself, located in a building that's actually part of NYU now, the Brown Building.
That's right, owned by Max Blank and Isaac Harris. And things were already tense there, even before the fire.
Right, I read about that. There was a big strike just the year before, wasn't there? Mostly by the women working there.
Yes, a major strike in 1909, the Uprising of the 20,000. They were protesting mistreatment, terrible conditions. They wanted basic things.
Like what sort of things?
Like better pay, shorter hours, safer conditions, specifically mentioning things like functional fire escapes and union recognition. That was key.
And the owners, Blank and Harris.
They basically just dismissed it all. Said the safety improvements, like a better fire escape, were too expensive.
Too expensive? Wow.
Yeah. And instead of negotiating, they called the police, broke the strike lines. Workers had to go back or lose their jobs. It was brutal.
So that refusal, that attitude, it really set the stage for what happened next.
It absolutely did. That background of neglect is crucial.
So let's talk about the day itself. March 25, 1911. The fire breaks out near closing time. And there's this one critical, fatal detail about the building.
The doors, the exit doors on the factory floors, they were locked. Locked from the outside.
Locked? Why on earth would they lock the exit doors?
Well, Blank and Harris claimed it was to prevent workers from taking unauthorized breaks or maybe slipping out early. Some reports even suggest it was to stop them from stealing small scraps of fabric.
So, a cruel solution, as it was called. Locking people in for productivity or to prevent petty theft?
Pretty much. And it turned the place into an instant trap when the fire started.
And the fire spread fast.
Incredibly fast. You have to picture it, the 8th, 9th, and 10th floors packed with sewing machines, tables, and crucially, hanging fabrics, finished shirtwaists, and piles of lightweight cotton scraps everywhere. Highly flammable stuff.
So it just went up like a torch.
Exactly. Eyewitnesses said the whole thing became an inferno in minutes. People said, you know, on a normal day, the factory would have emptied in maybe 10 minutes at quitting time. But that day...
They had no way out.
Many didn't. The main stairwells became blocked by fire or smoke almost immediately. The single, flimsy fire escape quickly became overloaded with people, and then it collapsed.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Pulled away from the wall, sending people plunging to their deaths. And then you had the elevators. The operators tried desperately to make trips up and down, but they were overwhelmed. Some people even jumped down the elevator shafts. Which left the windows. And that's where those truly horrific accounts come from. Young women, girls, really, some teenagers, appearing at the windows, flames visible behind them.
And the crowd below, watching this unfold.
Yes, a crowd gathered quickly on the street. They were shouting, pleading for them to wait, for the fire department, for nets. But the ladders didn't reach that high. The nets they tried to use just ripped when the bodies hit them.
I think they jumped.
They jumped, sometimes holding hands, dozens of them, falling onto the sidewalk. Mm. It was a public spectacle of the most horrific kind.
Yeah, Blank and Harris, the owners,
yeah,
blocked the doors.
They were actually in the building when the fire started, but they, along with some others, managed to get to the roof.
To the roof.
They apparently knew about an access route to the roof, possibly through an adjacent building. So while maybe 200 workers were trapped below,
they saved themselves.
They saved themselves. They had the keys. They knew the escape routes the workers didn't. Survivors and eyewitnesses told these stories graphically. It wasn't just a tragedy. It was seen immediately as this, like, ultimate symbol of greed and total disregard for human life.
One of the worst industrial disasters the country had seen.
Definitely, up to that point. And because it happened so publicly, so visually, it hit hard.
So the aftermath, mm-hmm. 146 dead, over 70 injured. The city must have been in shock. There was intense public focus, right?
Absolutely. Throughout 1911, it was huge news, outrage everywhere. People demanded justice.
Which led to legal action.
Yes, Blank and Harris were indicted. Manslaughter charges, basically, for the deaths. They went on trial later that year.
And with all those eyewitness accounts, the locked doors, it seems like a clear case.
You think so?
Yeah.
The prosecution presented harrowing testimony from survivors. But by the end of 1911, they were acquitted.
Acquitted.
Their defense attorney was very skilled, unfortunately. He managed to confuse the timeline, cast doubt on the testimonies of the mostly young, immigrant, Yiddish-speaking women who survived. He created enough reasonable doubt for the jury.
So despite everything, they walked free.
They walked free, returned to their business. And incredibly, reports surfaced just a couple of years later, around 1913.
Don't tell me.
Yeah. They were found to be locking factory doors again during working hours at a different location after new complaints were made.
Unbelievable. Did they even pay compensation?
There were civil suits, yes. Eventually they settled, but the payout was minimal. In 1913, it worked out to about $75 per life lost.
$75.
$75. It just shows how little value is placed on those workers' lives, even after such a disaster. And, you know, the problems didn't just vanish. Years later, in 1958, there was another garment shop fire, the Monarch Fire, with some disturbingly similar issues, locked exits, flammable materials. It showed these weren't isolated incidents.
But even though the owners got away with it legally, the fire itself, it did change things, didn't it? You said it was a catalyst.
Oh, absolutely. The public outcry was too massive to ignore completely. It really galvanized people. Politicians, activists, religious leaders, writers, people started demanding real change.
So reforms did happen.
Yes, significant reforms. New York created the Factory Investigating Commission, led by figures like Al Smith and Robert Wagner, who later became major political figures. They pushed through dozens of new laws mandating better building safety, fire codes, regulating working hours for women and children, stuff like that.
So actual concrete changes to prevent this from happening again.
Yes, it laid the groundwork for a lot of modern workplace safety regulations, but it wasn't like an overnight fix for everything. The systemic issues, the power imbalance that remained a struggle, but it was a huge push forward.
And you mentioned the impact on the women's movement too.
Definitely. This tragedy highlighted the vulnerability of working women, particularly immigrants. It fueled the arguments for women's suffrage, arguing that if women had the vote, they could push for better protections.
Right, giving them political power.
Exactly. And it spurred women to become more active in labor unions, like the International Ladies Garment Workers Union, which grew stronger after the fire. Women started organizing, demanding rights, taking up more space in public life and activism. It was part of that broader shift you saw in the progressive era.
So bringing it to today, how is the fire remembered? That building still stands, right?
Yes, the building is still there, part of NYU. In 1991, 80 years after the fire, it was designated a National Historic Landmark specifically because of the fire and its impact.
Are there memorials?
There are plaques outside the building. And every year on the anniversary, there are commemorations, often involving labor groups, reading the names of the victims. It hasn't been forgotten.
Why do you think this particular event has such enduring power?
Well, I think it's partly the sheer horror of the details, the locked doors, the jumping victims. It's so visceral. But more than that, it's a really stark lesson, isn't it? About what happens when profit is prioritized over people's basic safety and dignity.
Yeah.
And those issues, labor rights, safe workplaces, fair treatment, corporate accountability, they're still incredibly relevant today all over the world. The fight for social justice, for equality, it's ongoing. The Triangle Fire is a powerful reminder of why that fight matters.
So wrapping this up, It's this incredibly dark story, this awful tragedy born from neglect, from greed.
Yeah.
146 lives lost.
Just devastating.
But somehow, paradoxically, it becomes this major turning point.
Right.
It forces changes in labor laws, boosts workplace safety efforts, and adds real fuel to the fight for women's rights in America.
It really does underscore how sometimes, unfortunately, it takes a profound tragedy to force meaningful change.
Which leaves us with a question, I suppose. In a world today where, let's face it, information about working conditions can still be hidden or maybe ignored, what does the legacy of the Triangle Fire really teach us?
Mm.
The need for constant vigilance, you know, to make sure workplaces are safe and people are treated with dignity and justice everywhere.
That's the core question, isn't it? How do we ensure it doesn't happen again in new forms, in new places? It demands that we keep paying attention.